On today's episode of The Good Word, Ice Young joins us to discuss, is Paul George a superstar or just a superstar talent? We check in on the WNBA Finals and we get into coaches on the hot seat headed into the NBA season. All that and talk about pickup ball coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. We are part of the Yahoo Sports NBA network, and we also, once again, have our own feed finally. So don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review us to let us know exactly what you think. And today is Wednesday, which means we are doing Wednesdays with Ice. Ice Young, how you doing?
I'm good, fam. I'm good. Happy Wednesday. How are you?
It is Wednesday, which means it is the middle of the week. It is like I am trying to gin up all of this excitement, right? Because it is like literally the middle of the damn week. So we just here. You know what I mean? Like we like Wednesdays with Ice is going to be the day where we're going to have to, you're going to have to lift me up some days. I'm going to have to lift you up some days. That's just what it's going to have to be around here.
I love it. That's a good team. That's a good team.
No. We're going to have some fun. We're going to do some more NBA preview stuff, bounce some stuff off of Ice. We're going to talk some WNBA basketball. But first, let's get into a little bit of the news of the day in Philadelphia, or rather it started off in Atlanta. But in Philly, Paul George has a bone bruise in his hyperextended knee. No structural damage. He's probably, I would assume, not going to play for the rest of the preseason. The regular season begins next Tuesday night or next Wednesday night, I believe, for the 76ers. And Joel Embiid is already out for the preseason, you know, just because he's Joel Embiid. And I believe he told Tim Bontemps of ESPN, if I had to guess, I will probably never play back-to-backs for the rest of my career. I don't know exactly how that makes you feel, Ice. That don't make me feel good, but what say you?
I'll start by saying that me living in South Jersey and have always been an assumed 76ers fan, it does not make me feel good. It makes me feel like Joel Embiid is doing what a lot of us hate in big men. You know, I think it's a word that starts with S, has an F and a T. And like
S-O-F, capital T, soft T. That's a line from the movie Life. That's right before Eddie Murphy got hit in the face by that big dude who tried to take his cornbread.
Oh my gosh. honestly, I mean, it's just a balance, right? Like you're the 76ers. You bring in Paul George. You have Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey. Like you're putting together a roster that can compete for the Eastern Conference. And it's just all about health. It's all about health at this point. I think with Paul George, the thing that's concerning to me about this is that I'm glad it's a bone bruise and that they're not concerned. But he played 76 games last season. That was the first time that he had played more than 56 games since 2018-2019. So my thoughts are just like, hey, is this just the aftermath of you playing so many games, being able to go hard, and now maybe we deal with this your first year in Philly? So hopefully it's nothing, but I think that's lingering in the back of my mind is that it's coming off of a season where he played a ton of games and hasn't played that many games in a very long time. But I think you have to manage them. You know, like this, it's going to be a test of how do you manage these injuries and make sure that players stay healthy throughout the season. And then obviously the playoffs.
It's a double-edged sword for me. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you because not even dovetailing, you know, we're going to stay right here in this space. But Michael Malone the other day, head coach of the Denver Nuggets, one-time champion removed, he said something about his team right before a preseason game where he talked about we don't condition well enough. Like, as a basketball culture, I think he was saying. I don't think he was saying necessarily his team specifically, but he was basically saying we are coaching out of fear now where we don't condition our players enough in a preseason. We're afraid to run our players, you know, through the regular season, through the playoffs. I remember talking to a head coach maybe a week ago, and I was just asking him about the difference between training camps before and now. This isn't a coach who's coached 30 years ago. This is someone who's been in the trenches. And he talked about, Ice, the lack of lag time from the start of training camp to once the regular season starts. Like, training camp basically begins on October 1st, and game one of the regular season will be 3 weeks later. I don't know if that's enough time to, A, condition your guys, even if they're coming in and you're just doing informal get-togethers and everything else, but to actually go hard when you don't have the two-a-days, when you don't have the things that make it hard, I don't know how guys can handle hard. And I think so much of this NBA, not that you can't preserve guys' bodies, because I just think there's a cost that comes with being an NBA player.
Right.
And the cost is sometimes, hey, you got to push yourself. Like, that's what it is. We accept that cost when we talk about the NFL, I think. We accept that. We look at the NFL and say, that's a gladiator sport. If you get hurt, you get hurt. And next man up and we move on. Right.
Yeah. Like, the career it's not pretty, but that's what it is. As long. Yeah. And you're not expected to play as long. And so it's already assumed. I agree with you.
And then the other part of, all these guys want to play for 20 years. So they're trying to, they're never really pushing themselves in the way that says, okay, we got a championship opportunity right now. Like, let's go for it. And for me, the lack of conditioning, I won't say the lack of strenuous conditioning, like sometimes you got to push yourself. And one thing that the coach told me, Ice, was, how can a player push himself in the playoffs where you're playing every other day? Like, you don't have the long breaks in between games. You're playing, you got a day off the next day, or you got a plan, then you got a practice day, then you're playing the next day, and then you're traveling. Like, something is happening physically every day, and that's after an 82-game season, so nobody's going to be fresh. And to assume that Joel Embiid, throughout his career, who has never been quote-unquote fresh, is going to be fresh now, I don't know if that's necessarily the strategy of a winning championship sort of team. I get you wanting to be healthy, but health hasn't always been the issue for Joel Embiid. Ice. Sometimes it's been performance. Sometimes he just has not played well in playoff situations. Last year was a little bit of a difference. He had the Bell's palsy. That did not look good. He was coming off of the knee injury already, and he played really well in that short series against the New York Knicks. But by and large, there were series where he came up short. And I don't know if I will always attribute health to that, or if I do, Ice, nobody's 100% in the playoffs, because nobody's supposed to be healthy in the playoffs or 100% in the playoffs.
Right, right. And it's also tough, too. Like, you know, you look back at his season last year, he only played 39 games. And so you talk about getting into the playoffs. If he hasn't played a ton of games during the season, the expectation is so high during the playoffs that you have to be fresh. And so then I think it doesn't leave room for what you just said, maybe not playing well, maybe not having a good game. It's like, dude, you barely played during the season. Now we're in the playoffs. You need to be on the money every game. And we know, as humans, as basketball players, sometimes it's just not your day that day. And so I agree with you. I think it's been a bit of both, which is why the frustration for the Sixers can be so high, right? Like, you're dealing with, sometimes he's able to play, sometimes he's not. He's not always consistent when he's on the court. You bring in Paul George, who we've know has struggled with injuries. This is his last push to really get something going towards the end of his career. It's just hard to keep everybody healthy. And that's literally like what it's banking on. But you're like you said, it's not just about health, right? We also have to think, get on the court, play well together, have chemistry, and play consistent basketball. That is something that else has to be developed.
You just hit the important thing for me, Ice. You talked about chemistry, right? And can you develop chemistry and continuity if you're never actually playing together when it's hard? Right. And I look at the Celtics last year. Right. Like, Kristaps Porzingis was kind of in and out because of his injuries, which you expect a guy who's 7'4" and his injuries to have. But Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Jrue Holiday, those guys played the lion's share of games and minutes, and they developed a continuity that they were able, and a sweat equity by and large, that you were able to cash in on once the playoffs began. And if you don't have that, if you don't know how to play together when it's hard, I don't know how you can win the playoffs when you got the Boston Celtics to deal with, the New York Knicks to deal with. God forbid the Milwaukee Bucks, who have honestly the most continuity outside of the Celtics amongst the top teams. You know, even though they really, you don't look at them as having any because of the Dame Lillard thing last year. I'm a firm believer in continuity meaning something when it comes. You have to have something to lean on as far as a collective unit of knowing, okay, Joel wants the ball here. This is how we play through him when, you know, it's game five of a playoff series and it's the fourth quarter and we really have to have something to to lean on. I don't know if this is the strategy. I know everybody brings up the Kawhi Leonard year where he didn't play back-to-backs. He played 60 games and they won a championship. But he was dragging that, he was dragging that leg towards the end of that. Secondarily, Kawhi Leonard was a friggin' cyborg, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if Joel Embiid is a cyborg. I don't know if Paul George is a cyborg. I'm going to ask you this one because this wasn't on the rundown. Is Paul George a superstar or a superstar talent?
Ooh.
I got ice stumped, y'all. I got
ice stumped. That's a good one. That's a good one. I think I'm going to say he's a superstar. Like, I think we've seen consistency in his game. There's somewhere in my notes where I have his numbers over his career and this and that. But I feel like in what he showed us in his consistency, when he's healthy and he plays, he's a superstar. Let me get your thoughts. You posed the question.
I posed the question for a reason. Because I think for me, and I have a more, shall we say, like discerning definition of superstar. I don't need to know anything else. I just need to know that you're there and you're showing up and we got a chance. That only applies to maybe a handful of players in today's game. I don't think that necessarily applies to Paul George. You know, and whether he's a number one, number two, like I'm not necessarily tripping on that. When I saw him lead the Clippers to the Western Conference Finals in 2021, when Kawhi Leonard, you know, tore his ACL against Utah, I was like, oh, okay, he's in full bloom. He has all the tools to be the superstar player for a month stretch. Can he be that can he be that for an entire season? Maybe you're going to tell me back, Vinny, he doesn't have to be a superstar player because he's playing next to Joel Embiid. He's playing next to Tyrese Maxey. Very true. All he has to do is be the 3-and-D guy that that maybe his talent and his demeanor says that he should be, as opposed to having to carry. But when you're playing next to Joel Embiid and his health is a question, you need someone capable of being a superstar because you don't know if Joel Embiid's going to show up health-wise. Now, speaking of health, Lonzo Ball, who has played, I can't remember the last time Lonzo Ball played, to be perfectly honest. Like, I saw some graphic where it was like 2 teams ago for James Harden. I think Kevin Durant was still in Brooklyn. I was going to say New Jersey, but that made me sound like an old man. Like, he was still in Brooklyn. Like, the whole league was in a completely different place the last time Lonzo Ball played, point guard for the Chicago Bulls. Like,
yep. It
feels like the world has moved so fast. He's had 3 knee surgeries since he last played on January 14th, 2022. Remember the whole thing last year that was really uncomfortable? I think it was Stephen A. that said he was hearing that Lonzo Ball was having trouble walking, and then Lonzo Ball from outside of a pool is like, look at me, I'm standing up. Look at me, I'm standing up. Like Pinocchio with the strings removed. Like, he was trying too hard to do something. But now he returns, and just from inside the mind of an athlete and maybe, just maybe not necessarily getting inside of Lonzo Ball's head, but A, how do you think he's feeling right now, maybe the nervousness or whatever it is, but B, in a big picture standpoint, I feel like the league is kind of rooting for Lonzo Ball to get back on the floor and to get it right.
Yeah. I've been through 2 ACL tears. I've sat out 656 games and came back. And so I have a personal understanding.
656 games? What you playing? AAU? Did y'all play 10 games a day? Or did you mean 656
days? Days, not games. No, but that's probably why.
Are you Jamaican?
Why I tore the ACL.
How many games are y'all playing in a day?
Oh my goodness. But it's like, you know, I think coming back from injury, it's always the mental battle, right? Obviously, there's a huge physical one that he faces. You know, I was doing research and Shams Charania had told us that there's never been a player that's come back from this successful injury that he had, that rare double cartilage transplant. And so I feel like, one, that's already just a mind bomb to have to get through. But I think the second thing is just expectations. When you're coming back from injury, when you're getting back to yourself, it's all about feel. It's all about confidence, all about comfortability. You have to get rid of the expectations. Like, I hope he's going in there with no expectations on what he needs to do, how he needs to perform. Billy Donovan has said, like, we think he could contribute, but they're happy to have him back. Like, there's no pressure there for you other than to come back and be on the floor and stay healthy? And I think health is the number one priority, right? It's not about getting back and immediately doing exactly what you need to do. It's about staying healthy and maintaining that health. I love that we're rooting for him because I think he was one of the first, and him and his dad and the Balls, right? And their family, they were just one of the first of their kind. You know, we talk about like the social media era when it was taking off, the reality TV, they had a show. Like, we knew so much about them. And so we have been following him and his family and his career forever. And so I think that's also a piece of it too, is that we just knew like what could be. And before he had gotten injured in 2022 in that season, like, he was playing basketball. He was playing well. He was having career highs in field goal percentage and scoring. Like, he was at a great level, and you could see that he was growing and really starting to make his mark. And then these injuries hit, and it's been tough for him to bounce back. So I hope his mindset is that there are no expectations, only that to stay healthy and to focus on that. But I think we're rooting for him because we know the story that he went through. We've all been so close to his story because of how, you know, the platform that his father and had created for them. And so I feel like that's why we're a little more bought in than some others.
I think one thing about it is, like, I'm not going to be that separated from the sport I cover to say that sometimes some stories make you feel bad. You know what I mean? Sometimes some stories make you feel good. Like, that's a big reason why we're in it, whether you're a fan or, you know, you're in it and you're playing. Like, you like the feeling that sport gives you. So when you see someone struggle like this, like, it's been a while, but, and not to say that he's on this level, but when Penny Hardaway had gotten hurt and Grant Hill had gotten hurt, like, those were two guys in sort of my formative years where I'm like, those were going to be my guys. Those were going to be my Magic and Bird and Michael, in a formative sort of way that I was able to not follow their careers through the history books, but follow their careers through real time and to see them elevate. And then it just got taken away from them, by and large, due to experimental surgeries that we didn't know that much about that turned out to be really, really damaging. We think of surgeries in a way of, oh, it's going to fix something and you're going to be okay on the back end. Penny Hardaway had that first microfracture knee surgery where basically they put like a hole in your knee or something like that. And they don't even do that shit anymore. Like, it was like, oh yeah, you had microfracture surgery, you'll be back in a year or whatever it is. Now it is so prohibitive. And it was Dr. James Andrews, the doctor everybody loves. Like, they were doing it and then they stopped doing it. Like, Amari Stoudemire was like the first one that actually came back. And I think it was in large part ice due to the fact that he was so young. When he went through it, I think Amari went through it in 05, missed the whole year, came back in 06 and looked like himself. And even then, it was a short shelf life on that. With Lonzo Ball, I remember, Ice, that Chicago Bulls team. That was the first year of DeMar DeRozan. They had Vucevic. Zach LaVine was there off of the Jimmy Butler trade. They looked really, really good. And Lonzo Ball was the glue guy. He was the guy that facilitated. He passed it up floor. Like, one key thing that we don't talk about, and you can talk about this, Ice, as point guards, kicking it up the floor is so important. Like, you don't got to dribble. You see a guy up ahead, get up ahead, start the early offense. That's what Lonzo Ball was doing from just a basketball standpoint, and passing was so contagious. And I felt like he played with a spirit that permeated through his teammates. And I felt like we were robbed of something with that particular team. And now with the Bulls, they got Josh Giddey. Ayo Dosunmu is there. Like, I wonder how he fits, if he can fit there. So, like you said, it's just a matter of him actually getting on the floor. Now, you tell me, Ice, how difficult was it getting back on the floor after double ACL surgeries? Like, the confidence.
Yeah. I was in my 7th year of college basketball. So I had done
a super senior.
And this was obviously before, I mean, I only played 3 years ago. Like, I graduated in 2021. So this was before COVID and like the extra COVID years. I technically had an 8th year to play. Like, I could have came back after the 7th year and taken the COVID year. But I think the biggest difficulty was just playing the game without thinking that you're coming off an injury. You know, like, trusting your knee that you can jab step, take the first step, and you're not thinking about it. You're not hesitating. I like to say, like, it took me, I feel like, 11 months to get cleared, physically cleared from the doctor, but about 14 months to really feel like myself. for me to really get into a signature spin move and not think about it at all. And then I was playing with the brace, right? I mean, there's that. That was also just a physical component as well as something is actually on me. Like, I'm not gonna lie, when I see other women on the court that have knee braces, I'm testing it. Yes, I'm testing it. If knee braces on the left, I'm hezzying that way. I'm testing it. Let's see if it works. And so I also felt like I knew that reverse psychology, and I was like, somebody gonna try to test me.
I have a question.
Yeah.
If you see a dude with a knee brace on, are you testing him or are you being nice? Because I've heard stories of how you play.
I'm testing him too. Everybody could get it.
Now, considering the couple of your last significant others have been dudes on the court, if the dude is cute, are you testing it? If you think the dude is cute, are you testing the knee brace or are you saying, let me just see how this game goes? I don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, take me there.
I'm definitely testing it because if I beat him, he's going to for sure know who I am.
Oh, you're trying to be remembered.
Yeah.
I respect it. It's inside the mind of ice. We are going to do a love segment.
Anybody can get
for
it.
For the love of ice, even if you got on a knee brace and you're cute, ice is going at you. But when we come back, we're going to talk some WNBA action because the finals are in full swing and everything is headed to Minnesota for game 3 tonight. So you're listening to The Good Word here on Yahoo Sports. Welcome back to The Good Word, Wednesdays with Ice. Ice, the WNBA Finals are in full swing. Game 3 tonight in Minnesota. I was following the game a little bit for the most part in the GameCast. I saw that it was close, or it felt like it was close, until midway through the fourth quarter. It felt like New York pulled away in a game that they had to have. Is that how you saw it, and is that how you think Game 3 will play out tonight?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, that's what happened. What we've seen consistent from New York is that they'll build a lead. They will start strong. They drop 31 points in the first quarter. They'll start strong and score the basketball. And then at some point in the game, you know that Minnesota is going to make their run. Like, you just know that they're going to figure it out. Nafisa Collier is going to get into a flow. Courtney Williams, they're going to score. They're going to knock down threes. Like, it's just the way that they play. They're eventually going to go on that run. And so, New York during the course of that game was up double digits, up 17 at one point. And then the Lynx had cut it to 2 with a little less than 6 minutes left. And you're thinking in game one, this happened for New York. They were up almost 20, I think. Largest comeback, right? It was 18, largest comeback ever that, you know, was tied.
The four point play, which I thought was a calamity of errors.
Crazy. Yeah, 4-point play was crazy. Courtney Williams, who was playing out of her mind, like in that first game, and game one has been awesome. But you think for the Liberty, like, hey, Lynx come back, they're within two. What's going to be the difference? Difference between game one and game two is they literally just had a response. I feel like we're seeing a championship level basketball from New York on defense. Like, that is what has actually surprised me the most about their adjustment game one to game two, is they held the Lynx to 66 points. Like, this is one of the best, if not the best, 3-point shooting team in the league, best offensive team in the league in terms of sharing the basketball and flow. And so to hold them under 70 in a WNBA finals game, like, is impressive. I don't think that will be the same though for game three. I've said I have the Lynx winning in 5. I think it's possible they could win in 4. The next two games are at the Target Center in Minneapolis. And it's a Lynx team that doesn't lose games back to back. Like, they are going to make the adjustments necessary. Cheryl Reeve is going to make the adjustments. I'll say the last thing that surprised me for New York was Bonaja Laney Hamilton. Like, anytime we get to the finals, yes, we always know what the stars are going to do, but it's always right. That one role player that comes out and that really makes the difference. You know, Leonie Fibish has been somebody for New York that through the course of the playoffs, she's really stepped up. But Bonaja Laney Hamilton dropped 20 points. It was a playoff career high. And she's normally known for her defense. But she had 20. Breanna Stewart had 21. Now you've got 41 points only coming from two players. And neither of them are named Sabrina Ionescu. Neither of them are named Jonquel Jones. And so I really love the versatility that we saw from Bonaja Laney Hamilton. Like, we know she can be a bucket, but sometimes on this New York offense, it's not enough shots. She doesn't get all the opportunities. But I would say if you're New York, along with the defense that you played, can you force 20 turnovers again? I didn't think I would see the Lynx turn the ball over 20 times. I thought that was very uncharacteristic. But also, can you get another role player or the same role player to continue to step up? I think that makes all the difference. We know what Stewie and Sabrina and Jonquel Jones are going to do.
No, it looked like, talk about Stewie. Stewie had like 21, 8, 7, and 5, like just a great all-around game.
Yeah, she had seven steals. Like, yeah, finals, yeah, seven steals.
It crazy. Does not sound like you expect her to repeat that performance in games 3 or 4.
Stewie is a 2-time WNBA champ. She's a 2-time finals MVP. So she's been here before.
Mm-hmm. But there's a but there. If y'all notice that pause, I'm giving y'all something, fellas.
Oh,
especially
my,
if you're playing against ice. If there's a pause, she's trying to find the polite way to say something that's really not so complimentary.
You think
John,
I'm
leave
so
that
polite.
Pause in there. Leave that air in there. So people will understand what I'm saying when I say it. So go ahead and give me the butt, Ice. Go ahead, give it to me.
I don't know if there's a butt, but to me it's like, you know what you're getting from Stewie. Like, the question is not about Stewie. You know what you're getting from her. Like, the way she plays the game and how efficient she plays the game, she's going to score the basketball. She's going to rebound. I did not expect her to have 7 steals, and I thought it was fantastic that. But again, like, that was the critical part of New York's defense, her being long and getting deflections. But to me, the question is not Stewie. Like, it's can Jonquel Jones stay consistent? Can Sabrina Ionescu stay consistent? I think Stewie is the most consistent person on that team where you know what you're going to get. But I also will say, though, in game one, Stewie missed 2 opportunities to win the game.
She did.
She missed 2 opportunities to win the game. There was a free throw that she had tied the game, and then she had the chance to win the game in regulation before it had gotten to overtime. And then she missed a layup at the end of overtime that I thought was still well defended, but it also was a layup. And Stewie having a 7-inch wingspan, getting to the rack, like, that's a 90, that should have been 2 points, I felt like. And so I also think we're seeing just the bounce back game from her and understanding what it takes. And it was cool for me to see. Sometimes these, you know, superstars, we don't always accurately, we're not always fair when they mess up. You know, sometimes we're like, it's Breanna Stewart. Can I really get on here and say that she had 2 opportunities to win the game and she did? Like, yeah, we have to tell the truth. And
yes,
so I love that she acknowledged that, you know, the next game and her post game, she was like, I wanted to come back and change the narrative. Because the narrative was that you're 0-6 in game ones as a franchise for New York. You built this super team to beat one team and you beat that team. But now you've got the Minnesota Lynx to beat, who you may not be equipped to beat. And again, I think that they could drop the next 2 games. I had Lynx in 5, but I easily think the Lynx could win the next 2 at home.
Ice, when I was skinny and I would be out here hooping and somebody blew something, like skinny being like a facial feature, like I was skinny with cheeks, right? Every now and again, if somebody blew like a shot or, you know, my short ass blocked your shot or something like that, I was good for blocking somebody's shot, like underneath the rim. I was good for that, long arms. So if somebody tried something and, you know, I sent it out of bounds, you know what I would do? I would do this with my cheeks.
I cannot take you serious.
That's what them cheeks was tight, dog. Them cheeks was tight on that layup. Them cheeks was tight.
Take you serious. Oh, my
Pro
God.
Pro athlete or, you know, backyard baller. Nobody's immune from them cheeks getting tight. We're going to break right here. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some expectations in the NBA season, which teams will exceed and which coaches are on the hot seat. You're listening to The Good Word. Welcome back to The Good Word. It's Wednesdays with Ice. Ice, we got a few teams every single season that makes a leap. A team that leaps from the bottom of the conference to the top or, you know, that type of thing where you kind of see them coming in a lot of cases. You don't see them coming. Like last year, the Pacers weren't even in the play-in and they were hovering near the top of the Eastern Conference to the end of the season. And then, you know, the injuries caught up with them, but they made a run to the conference finals, got swept by Boston. Orlando went from all the way at the bottom, basically the 13th seed, to being one of the best defensive teams, having Paolo Banchero as that scoring option going to the 5th seed, right? Dallas lost all those games toward the end of the season after the trade deadline the year before just so they could keep their draft pick. They got Derek Lively with that top 10 pick. He was a huge reason why they made a run to the NBA Finals. Not asking if there's a team that's going to make a run to the conference finals, but is there a team that you think that will rise from the ashes of the bottom of a particular conference and be a bona fide playoff team?
Yes. I think the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm a huge Ja Morant fan, personally.
You hang out with him?
No. Fan. I'm a fan, not a friend. I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan of Ja. I'm happy that he's healthy and back. Zach Edey, who has looked good in preseason.
Yes, he has.
He has looked very good in preseason ball. I think him paired with Ja, the pace that they're going to play at is something that, you know, their head coach, Taylor Jenkins, has talked a ton about, them wanting to play faster, hoping that in an 82-game season, that when other people get tired and run down towards that last third of the season, their pace is something that can take them through. And they have, you know, Marcus Smart, 10-year vet. You need vets in order to win. You got to teach the young guys how to do it. Mm-hmm. I think that they have a chance. I like the makeup of the team. I like the mindset. I like the idea that they want to play fast. And so that would be my team. I don't think they're necessarily a rise from the ashes. Like, if we're looking at, you know, the teams and some of the teams that have fallen at the bottom, Western Conference, I feel like you could pick them easily, right? And you just need, one, to stay healthy, two, for Ja to stay on the court and do what he's supposed to do.
Just off Instagram. That's all. Stay away from shotgun
Willies. I do media training, you know, with players. And, like, this is my rule of thumb. Ready social media. If you wouldn't say it or do it in front of your grandmother, why say it to the rest of the world? Like, I have the coolest grandmother of all time. Like, we do wine night on Fridays. I hang out with her on the patio. She's from Camden, New Jersey. If you know anything about Camden, New Jersey, you probably have a decent picture. Like, I have a very cool grandmother. But it's a ton of stuff that I would not say or do in front of her, you know? And if I wouldn't, like, I wouldn't then put them things on social media for that to be comfortable. So I'm sure he's gotten all the training and all the thoughts. But in case he needed any more advice, hope you see this, because we need you to stay on the court. We like watching you play.
Well, I mean, look, I am a younger grandson of a grandmother. So my grandmother was definitely more of the old school type. Yeah. So let's just say if she heard me cussing on the podcast, she'd be like, she'd call me first and middle name, which I will not say on this here, on this apparatus. She would call me first.
That's like worse than the government. Middle. First and middle? That's worse than the government. My grandmother never said my middle name.
that'd be the worst. Your grandmother call you first and middle. You'd be like, man, all right, what I do now?
Vincent Bernard.
Oh, my God. No, hell no. Thank goodness about Bernard. Good grief.
Oh, my goodness.
Ain't no Bernards here. Thank the good Lord, right? Like seriously,
you have a decent middle name then? You have a decent middle name?
No, I hate my middle name, which is why I'm not revealing it. I hate it. This ain't Bernard.
What is up with people not liking their middle names? I don't get it.
There are people I know who love their middle name so much that is their name.
Okay. I have a few. I know people like that, but it's normally when their first name is basic and they're named after somebody else. So it's like Tom, but Tom likes the middle name of, you know?
Yeah. No, I don't. Well, I'm named after somebody, which I tell my mama all the time, like, bro, you couldn't have pulled rank on this and gave me something original. Like, you had to name me after somebody whose parents were born in Mobile, Alabama. So you can damn near guess what my middle name is. Like, it's going to be something reasonably country, right? That's what, like, once again, if your name is Ja, chances are you were born in South Carolina, right?
Facts.
But back to the lecture at hand, Ice. Memphis is my pick, too. Ja only played 9 games last year. There was a 25-game suspension. Then he played the 9 games. And then he got hurt with the shoulder injury. They were 6-3 in those 9 games. Like, they made a lot of personnel moves heading into last season. Remember, Jrue Holiday wasn't there, but it was a 3-team trade that wound up netting the Memphis Grizzlies Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart only played 20 games for them last year. Desmond Bain only played 42 games for them last year. You brought up Zach Edey, which is a product of having the 9th pick in the draft, in a season in which you finished 27-55. So yeah, I think you're right about them not rising from the ashes, because just a couple of years ago, Ja Morant was saying, I'm fine in the West. Only thing I'm worried about is Boston or whatever team, or Milwaukee or whatever team that he said. He said, I'm fine in the West. And then his life spiraled like after that. But on the floor, he is spellbinding. Like on the floor, he gets to the basket. He gets fouled, which contributes to the injuries. I wonder what type of three-point shooter he's going to be. Like shoulder injuries, we don't think of as being devastating. But you mentioned Paul George in 2018-19. That was, I believe, the year where Paul George was very close. Like, I think he was top three in MVP voting. And then he hurt his shoulder. And it took him a long time, almost a full season, to get back to being Paul George, or the best version of Paul George. Ja Morant had a shoulder injury. I wonder if it's going to be that. That's the only thing that sort of stops me or gives me some level of pause is, are shoulder injuries not giving the respect that they deserve with you know what I mean, with these things? Jaren Jackson Jr., like, I think they have a well-built team. I just think they had a bad year last year. I do like Taylor Jenkins as a head coach. I still think they're young enough. Like, I thought about picking the San Antonio Spurs because you got Chris Paul over there and you got the extraterrestrial Victor Wembanyama, and you have someone who can give him the ball when the Spurs didn't even have anything close to a point guard last year, where you had all those dudes trying to get theirs and trying to prove that the Spurs were not a one-man team, and all they showed was Victor Wembanyama is the best player on this team. Like, that was the weird thing for me. I'm just not sure how healthy Chris Paul is going to be this season because he's 40 years old, and we legit have no archetype. And John just guessed my middle name in the chat. I hate you, John. Or John just pulled up like my personnel file or something like that. I can't believe that. I can't believe I actually stopped my train of thought to see what that was. I thought that was some pertinent information. And yeah, I hear spot my government name. How dare you?
First of all, John, you missed the group chat. Resend that in the group chat. I didn't get that one. Now I feel excluded. Dang.
Nope. John, if you just sent it to ICE, we you bet not have. Hey, who sends you good tequila at the end of every calendar year? That's your boy. Thank you, John. Appreciate that. But ICE, let's get into the last word here. Of course, with the season starting next week, playoff races, MVPs, who's going to win the championship? That's all going to be topic of discussion. But one of the less fun things to discuss, at least here, because I don't like to talk about people losing their jobs. But coaches on the hot seat. Like, the odds, I suppose, say that Billy Donovan in Chicago is one, Doc Rivers in Milwaukee is one, which I don't necessarily buy, and Willie Green with the Pelicans is one, or possibly Michael Malone, which I'm not really sure about, J.J. Redick, which I'm definitely not sure about, or Quinn Snyder in Atlanta. Is there a coach in particular that stands out to you and you're saying, I don't know if he's going to get fired, but we got to be watching him?
Yeah, I would say Billy Donovan with the Bulls. The reason that I have is, like, they have some talent on their team, but the roster is jumbled up, you know? Yeah, it's a bunch of guards. It just seems jumbled up. Like, there's a bunch of guards, Josh Giddey, Lonzo Ball, Kobe White, Zach LaVine, Ayo, Dalen Terry, Javon Carter, a bunch of guards and more and company. Mm-hmm. And so there's, like, the challenge of finding space and minutes for those guards. Also, though, the development, we obviously know that Lonzo is a question mark, so we don't really know how much that plays a part into it. But I feel like the roster should be better constructed. And that would be the reason that he's my pick on the hot seat.
Yeah, I tend to slightly agree with you. The only pause I have is that Jerry Reinsdorf does not like paying dues to not work. That is not how the Reinsdorfs roll over there. Like, they didn't fire Tom Thibodeau. It took them everything to be out here firing Fred Hoiberg and put Jim Boylan in charge. And boy, that man was Norman Dell from Hoosiers. He was out here coach push-ups. Like, there's man, that was a wild era, wild, wild time. But you're right. The Bulls have a guard-heavy roster. You're not sure what they're going to do with Zach LaVine. I'm curious what happens with Willie Green in New Orleans, only because of everything there with Griff and because of the fact that they don't have a center. You're trying to use Zion Williamson at center. You added DeJounte Murray. You got Brandon Ingram, who you didn't extend and you didn't trade. I don't know how that makes for any coach to be able to keep a roster in focus because of the, say, failures of the front office, but for front office leaving such a massive hole in team building. We all know it's very easy to assign a coach to its failures of roster construction. If you don't have a center and you're playing a dude who's injury prone at center, I don't know how that works. Like, I like the wings that New Orleans have. I love Herb Jones. Everybody loves Herb, you know, that sort of thing. But I have a lot of questions about the rest of them. Is CJ McCollum a starter or is he coming off the bench? Like, those are big time questions that any coach would have to answer, but you also have to deal with the front office. I don't get the Doc Rivers thing. He just got there.
Yeah.
He wins at a huge clip. Like, everybody makes the 3-1 jokes about Doc Rivers.
Yeah. He's still there, though.
Exactly. He's still there. Like, don't get me wrong. That championship ring has some dust on it. And I do think that Doc is better with the try-hard teams than the superstar teams. But I think if you have a healthy Dame Lillard, a healthier Giannis, I don't think that they're going to have many problems. I actually think the Bucks will be a sleeper. Now, moving on to, as John calls it, capturing the flag, as in Cooper flag, as in the presumptive number one pick in next June's draft. Is there a team that you're looking at? Hey, man, y'all should be tanking. And if you're not tanking, you're going to be figuring out tanking very early in the season.
I want to say the Pistons.
I think they're trying to win.
Which they should, because they tanked enough last season. Which they should.
Oh, they were just bad. I don't think they was tanking. You lose 26 in a row starting in the third game of the season. I don't think you're trying to lose that bad. I think you're just incompetent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. But they believe in Cade Cunningham. They believe in what he can do for their franchise. Your thoughts?
I mean, Washington, because they're Washington, right? Like, nobody ever expects anything of that franchise. In Detroit, there is expectations because there is a franchise history there. Utah, I would think, right? Because that was for very obvious reasons, that would seem like Cooper Flagg would be hanging out in Salt Lake City. But they've been too good to tank the past couple of years. They re-signed Lauri Markkanen, and by the date that they re-signed him, they can't trade him before the trade deadline. So that makes it so he won't be moved at all this season, which means it'll be very difficult for him. I don't know what Chicago's going to do. I don't know how the situation in Portland is playing out with so many young guys. The Hornets and Raptors are always going to be discussed in that way just because you're trying to figure out if they're in a malaise or not. But I do like Brandon Miller in Charlotte. I do think that he's going to be a difference maker. Like, Charlotte was in one of those places. Are they going to make a jump or are they going to make a fall? Like, it was really hard to figure them out. And John has the Clippers here. I don't know. I think the Clippers might be better than people think. I just think that the Western Conference is so good ice that whether the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, the Kings, like, someone amongst those four teams is going to severely underwhelm. And it's not going to be because they're not a good team. It's going to be because the teams in the conference have passed you by because they have more upside.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, we just finished talking about the Memphis Grizzlies. It'll be a team like that, right, that has some young guys, is building, putting together at the right time, chemistry, gelling, and continuity that we talked about, and then they surprise you.
Yeah, can you imagine Cooper Flagg in Memphis with all look, that would be a reality show for all the wrong reasons to have Cooper Flagg planting his flag in Memphis with the Grizzlies. Like, you need cameras on him, not just for the reality show element of it, but for security.
I was gonna say, be entertaining. Entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah, don't go down that street, Cooper. Don't. Hey, man, you ain't got to. Nope. Ain't none of that. That was a bad imitation of a Memphis accent. Memphis is like New Orleans without the charm. Like, if you love New Orleans, you understand Memphis, but it doesn't mean you like it. Like, I love New Orleans. New Orleans is one of my favorite places on earth to go and go hang out. But if you said go from New Orleans to Memphis, I'd be like, why? I think I wind up going to Memphis because, like, the MLK stuff every year, the Civil Rights Museum, like, you go there, you go to the Lorraine Hotel, you go to the tours, you see all the stuff. Like, it's really enlightening and informative and angering kind of at the same time, but you go every year because you feel like you have to. And they got some good food. But aside from that, for my own personal safety and mental health, I don't know if I'm really trying to hang out and kick it like that there. Like, good people there, but man, it is, man, it get dangerous sometimes.
Yeah, nah, I got friends who live in that area, and that is the you heat. Know how you always have that city in the group chat that you talk about, where it's like, look what happened now, look what this is going, look what it's
guess
Memphis.
Which city, guess which yeah. city. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's guess which state, it's Florida. If right. it's guess which city, it is Memphis. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Ice Young. Thanks for riding shotgun with me today. She's going to be doing this every single Wednesday. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back Monday with a season preview episode of The Good Word. It'll be a guest that you guys know and love. Don't forget to rate and review and subscribe to The Good Word wherever you get your podcast. And until then, everybody be safe.